And yet we're under very different circumstances. For one thing, the dining hall is really crowded. You know, in a Mevlevi dining hall, we would be able to have silence. We would, you know, Mevlevis used to point the eating utensils were pointed to the heart as a reminder that it's not me eating, but it is you, the divine, who is eating. So many things were arranged to remind us of the sacredness of our situation and to support a certain state of being. So it's going to be interesting. I strongly encourage you, when we're in the dining hall, I mean, it's never been this crowded here before. It's just the circumstances we're under, and Garrison needs to do this to sustain itself. They've really made a push to bring more groups, but this is really pretty full. And every room in this place is booked. We know, because we've been, you know, fitting in the very last rooms and begging for more rooms and waiting, and sometimes they come, sometimes they don't. So this is where we are, and how can we maintain that inner silence and that quality of being when we're in the midst of this busyness? We have a term for this in Sufism. It's called halvet der anjuman. It means, halvet means solitude, but it's a spiritual solitude, a retreat. It's a word used for retreat. So it's retreat in anjuman, means society, really, in the public, in society. It's to be in retreat, even in a crowd. Solitude in the crowd, retreat, even in the busyness of crowded conditions. And so I just draw our attention to that. We'll work with it. I mean, everything is perfect, as we were saying. There's something to be thankful for, even in this. So let's find out what that is. You know, at a Mevlevi table, I sometimes like to say that there's an adab. It's not a must. It's not a rule to be, you know, followed blindly or to be punished if you break it. But when we're sitting at a table of people, and say, for instance, there are 6 or 8 people at that table, it's beautiful if we can have one conversation, if we can all be together, rather than breaking up into distracting little twosomes or threesomes. And we can do that if we want to. But it would be very sweet if we could appreciate unity, appreciate oneness in every form. One way to do that, when it's possible, it may be too loud in the dining hall to do that, we can try, but to be aware and how lovely it is when somehow we can all be included in a single conversation. These are principles we try to embody in our lives. The Mevlevis were extraordinarily aware. And this awareness of the witness that I've been talking about, this would begin for Mevlevis from the first moment of consciousness. If you were in the Tekya, undergoing your 1,001 days of Chile training, you would be woken gently in the morning. Somebody would come to your door and they would say, "Aga o." Be aware. So this awareness would be from the first moment of consciousness and be sustained throughout your day. Threshold Society has been working for many years, for a few decades now, to translate, literally and figuratively, into our contemporary world, a tradition that had a disruption, a historical disruption, and had to be in some ways recreated. And it's a new time, requires new forms. And it's not as if we think the old form is preferable, we're deprived because we don't have it. No, times have changed. Everybody agrees to this. All the masters of our tradition and other Sufi lineages understood very well early in the 20th century that a new time had come and that Sufism would be more integrated with life. It was already pretty integrated. As mystical traditions go, it was the most integrated already. You did as a Mevlevi, you did 1,001 days of training, but then you were in the world, visiting the tekia or the deriga regularly, but having your own livelihood, your own family. This has for 14 centuries has been a very integrated spirituality. But now, even more so. There's another aspect to this that I want to explain, which is that the value of finding a new language to talk about spiritual truths. Because sometimes the old language gets worn out or gets full of associations that are misleading. Of course, we're not throwing out the core Quranic terminology, which is essential to understand, in our opinion. We need to know that iman is not belief. Iman is a perception of the spiritual nature of reality. We could translate it as faith if we understand that faith is both perception and a kind of commitment that comes from that perception. Or we talk about taqwa, which is awareness, a fastidious awareness of the consequences of our actions, and a wish to conduct ourselves appropriately and wisely. Many, many important terms that we preserve and will hold on to. But it's interesting that Camille and I just came from a few days in Vermont, which was a beautiful experience. And we were with our son and daughter-in-law and other friends, beloved friends, some of whom go back 35, 40 years, people also on the spiritual path, but in other traditions. And people have dropped, these are very sincere people, and some of them have, a lot has been dropped, a lot has been let go, especially at our age, you know, you get to drop a lot of things. It's actually wonderful getting to be this age. A whole lot of things are just not so important anymore. So we're with these friends and we're sharing this essence of our spiritual lives. We don't need to package it in a certain way. There's no need to give it a label. Now, one of the tragedies of our time is that some pretty terrible things are being packaged as Islam, for instance. And it's interesting that if it gets packaged a certain way, people will accept it. You know, you could package crime, tyranny, terror, put it in Islamic packaging, and people think, oh, it must be Islamic. That's what they're saying. Well, what about an Islam that's unpackaged? What about an Islam that is just brought down right to its essence? What if that could be offered? What if we could meet people and be true to what we understand by Islam, which is the awakening of the witness in friendship with the divine friend, as divine awareness in this world, as a servant, as someone who knows that there is nothing more beautiful or satisfying than to be a servant, and to know who you're serving. And through that, to become free of many things that have tyrannized our hearts, especially our own egoism, our own need to be recognized, our own need to be approved of, our own need to be in control, our own need to maximize pleasure and avoid anything uncomfortable, but to live in such a way that we know that the purpose of our lives is not to expect to be undisturbed all the time, but to embrace every circumstance of life with appreciation, with gratitude. Because everything we have come to trust, everything, is from that one. There's not a detail of this life. This sounds like crazy talk, I know, to some people. But there's not a detail of your life, of your story, that's without purpose and without grace. Is this what the prophets brought? Was this their message? Is the divine truly beneficent and infinitely intelligent and exquisitely beautiful or not? And our attitude towards these things is, verify this for yourself. Don't take it as a belief. Verify it. Find out for yourself, is there any moment in your life where if you don't turn to the divine, you won't be met by the divine? If you sincerely turn, if you invite the divine to be your companion in every state, will you ever be left alone? But there's also a work that goes on, the work of clearing the heart, the work of strengthening attention, the work of creating this quality of being that can sustain this awareness. Otherwise, you are just nothing but a reaction to temporary impacts and distractions and desires and not fully human, not the being you were designed to be and are equipped to be. So everything we do on this path, all our practices and joys and ceremonies and relationships and studies and literature, is all bringing us back to this central truth. And the one who is in that state of continual referencing and reporting to that one and only divine friend is guided, is sustained, is given information, is given inspiration, is given strength, is given forgiveness. Returning to the source of love. Mevlana is so, I don't know, he's just so charming because You know, the lover is kind of a hopeless character, actually. For instance, here's one we called, "Go Easy on the Lovers." Stop judging the lovers. See them with the eyes of love. Their time is precious and their souls are watching out for the beloved. In that moment, they can't make excuses to you. Apprehend what's going on within them. Don't judge them by their words. Don't wound the hearts of lovers. Do you see how you condemn their enthusiasm? We're not saying abandon all prudence. Yes, be cautious, but give allowance. Sometimes it's better not to interfere. Bowing to the heart. Lovers are continually ablaze. You can't tax a ruined village. If the lover speaks clumsily, don't call it a mistake. And if he or she is covered in blood, still, he doesn't need purifying. For martyrs, blood is better than water. His faith is better than 100 correct actions. Don't ask the love drunk for specific directions. What use does a diver have for snowshoes? Why do you order those whose robes are rent in pieces to mend them? When you're within the Kaaba, there's no prescribed direction of prayer. The religion of love stands apart from all religions. For lovers, the only religion and creed is the one who cannot be described. You can't tax a ruined village. Meaning the lover is already destitute in a worldly sense. There's no more that the dunya, the world, can take from you. So you've given it up already. And you've given it up because the love you found is more precious than anything else you could be attached to. And that's what it's like for those who burn with that love. And the love is... it is not a wild intoxication that causes you to lose your reason. It only looks crazy from the standards and values of worldliness. It is what you increasingly experience dwelling in the witness, just being in the witness. Because your being itself is of that love, has been born from that love, is sourced in that love. And it's a different kind of love than the love that grasps, that possesses, that needs. It's a love that has no need, and yet is very tender and sometimes painful and sensitive, and with the suffering of the world. And takes great strength to bear. So we will continue with these themes in the coming days, and those of you who are relatively new here, and all of us too, consider how, in the moments in between, in our comings and goings, in our meal time, in our relationships with each other, how this work is to be sustained, how this awareness is to be sustained. It's a great time to observe yourself. Without real self-knowledge, we will be enslaved. We will be tripped up. We will be hypnotized by parts of ourself that we don't even know. We're not even aware of it when it's happening. And easily distracted by a crashing door. One saint I knew said, "Your remembrance must be so great that even if you fell out of a tree, you would remember all the way down." Or Ibn Arabi was riding his horse one day, and Ibn Arabi thought everything was written in the Quran. And one day his horse threw him, and as he was flying headlong through the air, he thought, "Now where is this written in the Quran?" That is the real self that cannot be distracted. It's not a prey to every passing item that keeps its true north, that keeps its awareness of the purpose of its life, purpose of your life. So thank you. Thank you, Camille. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for getting here. Some people haven't gotten here. I know there's challenges out there. But anyway, we're very happy to be together. Assalamu alaikum.